Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining.
Hello and welcome back to Action Jacks. Have tomorrow, Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures down a buck and a half. NASDAQ futures down 28. This is after a down day yesterday in anticipation of the, well, who knows why, but maybe we just came back up from the sell-off last week, and that was, we mentioned on the show that it was kind of a decision time. We were down, came back about 40% of it. Now what are you going to do? Looks like yesterday the answer was we're going to sell again. And today, to be determined. We have Professor Liu.
Good morning, sir.
How are you, bud?
I'm good. I'm a little bit tracking the situation. Do you know where Diego Garcia is?
Yes, it's in the Indian Ocean. That's where we have our B-52s and stuff. It's a big base, isn't it?
It's a good-sized base, not a huge runway. We do use it as a staging base for B-52s and other long-range kinds of aircraft. And right now, it is the home of at least five and maybe as many as seven B-2s that were flushed out of their base in Whiteman, Missouri, which is east of Kansas City. I guess everything in Missouri is east of Kansas City, but Whiteman is on the western side of the state, east of KC, and we've put a bunch of those. You know, we only have 19 of those things that are operational. So we've moved a third of our B-2 fleet into an area that is pretty isolated, and that is within relatively easy striking range of the Middle East. And it's we've also moved I think 10 or 11 tankers, airborne tanker aircraft there. So interesting move. The question is, what's the target? And you know, is it a threat? Is it whatever? I don't know. The pieces that I was reading indicated that it was likely we were tired of shooting, you know, Tomahawk missiles at the Houthis, you know, to blow up some mud hut or whatever it is they've got over there, and that it might be more cost effective for the kind of damage that we want to inflict on them to simply use 2,000 pound bombs. And the payload on the B-2s is pretty good. So, interesting move.
Yeah, the B-52s to the point where they're not going to be used for bombing. They're used just for missiles and stuff, right?
Mainly, yeah. If we're going to fight with them, yeah. Although they can drop, you know, in places where we've got complete air superiority, they can drop heavy stuff.
But they're going to be easier to hit, though, right?
Yeah, if you're talking about people with sophisticated surface-to-air missile systems,
yeah.
Which Yemen really doesn't have, and we've been attacking Yemen with F-18s and off the aircraft carriers, and those things are just as radar visible as a B-52. The B-2 is totally stealth. It's the second generation, third generation stealth.
I've seen those at the water show, Air and Water Show.
Pardon me?
I've seen one of those at the Air and Water Show. They're pretty neat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And they're you know, it's a flying wing.
I just can't believe we need those things to go attack the Houthis, but...
Well, that's my question, right? What are we doing? Are we going to say, okay, fine, we're going to come over now, and instead of just pinpoint drops on your some of your power stations, we're now going to completely crater every one of your airports so that they can't work for another 2 years. We're going to drop super heavy ordnance on power stations and other things. Are we going to do that, or are we flying? Do we anticipate flying against a target that has surface-to-air missile capability?
This is where
that would be Iran.
This would be where some old naval bluff who's like 80 years old says, if we only had a battleship or a real cruiser, we'd just pull up 15 miles offshore and shell the damn place and be gone.
Yeah. We did that with New Jersey against Lebanon, and we did it in the Persian Gulf. Those things are, and I assume that we have the capability now, so that when you're firing a 16-inch shell, you can target it properly. They're not that accurate.
Well, they were in the Persian Gulf when guided by a drone.
But when you say guided by a drone, the rounds are still ballistic. You have to shoot one and then see where it hits, and then say, okay, we adjust for this. So I'm assuming that we have technology now that those shells would be guided all the way in, that there would be something illuminating a target, and those things would...
I don't know if any of those particular shells, unless they had some other ones, but those were they had all different kinds, but I don't think any of them had the ability to, they had a fin on them or anything that could... They could actually adjust their flight once they were hit.
Right. That's the question. I'm assuming that we have the technology to do that now, to guide, put a package on one of those things, recessed fins that would fit inside a gun barrel, and so when the thing's fired, it would guide itself.
We don't have any ships that have any ability to pound with cheap ordnance anybody. Biggest we have, I think, is a 5-inch gun.
I think that's right. I think the new stuff, they're it's nice to have a 5-inch gun, but I don't think we have that. And the comment for Navy ships now, or that you want, is vertical launch cells, because they're very adaptable, and you can, they're like four or five different missiles we can fire out of a vertical launch cell, and they are wildly capable, or they're wildly different in terms of their capabilities. But so in terms of your investment people, I would be asking the question, what's about to happen and where with those bombers moved into position? And I'm wondering, I mean, the head of STRATCOM, the Strategic Strike Command that we maintain, I think yesterday made a comment to the effect that Iran was within 10 days of, if they wanted to, being able to produce a nuclear weapon. And also, they are very close to being capable of putting it on top of an ICBM or an intermediate range ballistic missile that could strike Israel.
Couple questions. I'm no fan of those dudes, as you know, but we used to have five people that signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Agreement, which somebody essentially went to the bathroom and used it in there. Everybody's got these bombs. I mean, I'm no fan, but how do you tell Iran they can't have a bomb when everybody around them has one, without admitting or denying it?
Well, not everybody around them has one.
Well, Pakistan does. Have them. India does. And,
pardon me?
Pakistan appears to have. Israel does. India does.
Pakistan does, but Pakistan's no threat to Iran. Russia is not a threat to Iran. Israel has, we believe, has nukes. But Israel has not done anything to Iran except in response to an Iranian attack.
I understand that, but I'm saying just in general, how do you tell somebody now they can't have them when everybody else has got them?
Oh, well, that's good. You know, first of all, as I said, everybody else.
I can see why we're telling them that. I mean, surely
doesn't have it.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you tell them? You tell them, and this administration has said this, and I think it was probably part of the previous administration too. We're not going to allow Iran to develop a nuke. They're belligerent. They're bellicose. They sponsor terrorism. They're sponsoring piracy in the Red Sea. They've sponsored these horrific attacks in Gaza and Lebanon. In Syria, they're a regional they've attacked Saudi Arabia.
They're a regional destabilizer.
We're not going to allow you to do it.
And if sorry to interrupt, but you go over again. It makes absolutely no. Is this part of just an administration that has to keep doing this crap just to keep their people in line? Because I don't see how this. What good does it do them to screw around with people in the Red Sea? But I mean, it seems like. Money they don't have, very ill spent to me. I know you tell me don't try and put my mind in other people's heads because the other people don't think the same way. But somewhere along the line, this seems like really weird that these guys continue to do this. They don't gain anything. They just got their ass kicked in Syria. I mean, they seem to be losing everywhere, and yet they keep doing it. I mean, I don't understand what are they getting out of the deal?
They become a regional hegemon. They become a power. They can establish the kind of religious theocracy that spreads across the whole region and that they control.
Except they're going backwards.
With all due respect, these guys don't look at things the way
that's what I mean.
We do.
I know.
These are Persians, okay, with a Persian worldview. And like many of these areas, they long to reestablish, many of the leadership for this area, they long to reestablish the goals of Persia when Persia was the king of the heap. And so they look at this area, and it's backed now by not just a multi-century or even multi-millennia worldview, but it's backed now by a religious fervor that tells them that they should be ruling this area and that their God demands that they do. And so you have a very aggressive group that believes that they have to destroy Israel. They can use Israel as a lever to direct the rest of the Arab world against another state rather than focusing on them. And they look to expand their regional influence.
What percentage of their two things I've read, and again, the stuff that you can get at, but I've read one of the hardest things the CIA or people have ever had to do is get information in Iran. It's almost impossible to have boots on the ground there. Well, maybe they've figured out a way to do some of that, but how do you, if you're that guy's running the place, the Ayatollah or whoever those people are, you know that 90% of the people there don't want you in there. How can you count on them to fight a war for you? I mean, there's only so far you can get with terrorism and torture, I think, but maybe not.
I don't know. I've read several books that say that the younger population of Iran is quite secular. And looks to the West and is envious of what is going on in the West, and are getting tired of the constant repression that theocratic state imposes. On the other hand, you've got a male-dominated literally a patriarchy that represses a significant percentage of the population and wants to maintain its power. One of the problems, and I, as you said, at some point, when's the wake-up call come in there? I don't know. They don't look at the welfare of their population the same way we do, and they can mobilize their population against the United States and against the West in general by saying, you know, this is going to destroy our way of life, it's going to destroy our culture, and if we allow these kinds of ideas to come in, look what's happening, you know, look what's happening in the West, look what's happening with you know, drag shows and other perversions that they focus on, and they can keep their population in line. We've been waiting for the moderate, you know, the moderate Islamists, the moderate rulers in Iran, or the moderate politicians in Iran to emerge for decades. We've been hearing about it since the Ayatollah.
We've been waiting for it in China for decades too.
That's right. We've been hearing about it. You know, these guys are real moderates. We heard, by the way, the same thing about the guy that took over in Syria, and I told you to be really careful about that, because these guys were just ISIS that allowed their people to play soccer. So we've been hearing about this for decades, and it's not there. You know,
it must be the power thing. I mean, when we revolted here, we essentially had the same munitions as the army we were fighting. I mean, if you were a farmer with a flintlock, you were even with the guy. I'll tell you
who has the best picture inside Iran right now, I suspect, is the Israelis. They have penetrated Iranian military, Iranian security, and they've done it over and over again. And oh, by the way, you know, they just took down the Iranian air defense in such a way that it might, our leadership may be saying, our military leadership may be saying, look, if we're going to hit these guys, this is the time to do it before they have a chance to rebuild.
Well, I have had the fortune, good fortune, of probably knowing 8 to 10 people from Iran. There's a few that live down Ogden Dunes and Fari and his gang. Those people are like Americans on steroids. They all they do is go to school, work hard. They don't cause any. It's they're like the Americans of the 70s, for God's sake. Every one of them says their family is over there. They can't go back even and visit, or they won't be let out again. Especially if you got an engineering degree or something. So it's just awful. I mean, to a person. I don't. I guess maybe it's if you don't have any arms. You know, and this is not a shot for the Second Amendment, but. I think they're just powerless. Fari says that the people that disappear into the jails is something that's almost legendary.
Yeah, I mean you'll see occasionally protests that arise up there and that come forward that start some organic stuff. I'm sure we are trying to foment some kind of political unrest there, but it's a very closed, tight society with, as I said, a theocratic patriarchy that is reinforced, as far as I can tell, by a significant portion of the population.
Well, I think they've got people intimidated. Who knows if all of a sudden everything happened and wouldn't turn around like we thought we had people on our side in Afghanistan. It turns out we didn't.
I don't. Yeah, you keep hearing about, well, there are moderate elements that really want to westernize, and as I said, my understanding is there's a significant portion of the younger population that is quite secular. But
well, they were under the Shah, right?
You're not seeing those people. You're not seeing those people come to the fore, and to the extent that they are, I mean, the Iranians have tried to assassinate people here in the United States, who are part of the diaspora that are protesting. We believe, at least I heard the report, that they had an assassination order out on President Trump when he was campaigning. I mean, as I said,
going after the guy who drew the picture of the Allah or something? The guy in Britain? What was his name? You don't have to talk about
it. You mean the author?
Yeah.
Rushdie?
Yeah, Salman Rushdie? Still after him or...
Well, yeah, he had an assassination attempt on him. You know, there's still a fatwa for his death.
That's what I mean. They're still after him.
He was attacked at a book reading in New York about 2 years ago.
Yeah,
some guy put his eye out and stabbed him multiple times. So these are these these are people that were real. At some point, you say, "Okay, we're not going to deal with you anymore. We're just going to take down. We're going to take down your nuclear program, and maybe do some other stuff."
How long ago was it the Israelis did that? they went after the, what do they call them, the things that spin around and make the uranium.
Oh, you mean the centrifuges?
They did that. Was that 10 years ago? 8 years ago?
Well, I think we did that.
I think we might have guided them, but I think it was their planes.
Well, no, we didn't. They didn't bomb those centrifuges. We put a virus into the programming for those things.
There was a raid they did. I'm saying yes. At least 10 years ago. I don't know when that was, but
well, and they blew up a. Most recently, when they destroyed the S-400 systems, those Russian surface-to-air missile system that was quite advanced. By the way, that was done by F-35s that everybody was decrying don't work. When they took that down, they blew up a bunch of long-range missile stuff and potentially destroyed a significant capability or put a dent in their ability to develop nuclear fuel. But we haven't obviously been successful in doing that.
I don't know that much about Iran. I know it's not the desert. Although I was surprised that the first Middle East oil was found in Iran, out of all places. And that,
Iran. Yeah.
But are they capable? I know they have some rivers and mountains and stuff. I mean, how can I say it's a real country? But do they have the capability of feeding themselves? I mean, is there enough agriculture there or no? I don't know.
I believe they are relatively self-sufficient in terms of foodstuffs. And remember, they have a huge, you know, when Biden lifted the sanctions on them, when he took over, he allowed them to begin amassing huge stores of cash that they can use to buy stuff. And they can get foodstuffs from the, you know, from the Russians and some of their neighbors. So I believe they're relatively self-sufficient, but I don't know for sure. It's a bona fide. I mean, a lot of it is a bona fide desert.
Some of that cash is somewhat of a debatable thing. Now, the timing, I guess I'll agree with you, but the fact is, it was their money.
I'm not talking about the, you know, however many billion dollars it was in pallets that we had held. I'm talking about we lifted the sanctions on them that allowed them to sell oil at relatively simply.
Okay, yeah,
because they're mega bucks.
I have a feeling that, you know, if you really dug into this, you know, we've had several administrations in a row that, when it comes to crime and punishment, I don't know what the hell they're thinking. And this guy is no better; he might be worse. I mean, the idea, you only seem to pursue the stuff that you care about. I mean, I've read enough to know that there are guys that could put a hypodermic needle into a cargo of oil and within 20 minutes tell you exactly where it came from. And I can't believe that this Iranian oil getting out, that we can't trace it, we don't know where it is, and I'll bet some of it's coming here.
That may be the case, but we stopped doing that when Biden took over. And we can discuss the multiple failures of our foreign policy with respect to Iran all the way back to the cake shaped like a key, if you want to do that. But my point is that significant sanctions were imposed on that regime by Trump 1, and that they were doing some damage. And Biden immediately lifted those because his foreign policy people were basically the Obama foreign policy people who shared this vision of trying to stabilize Iran as a power base there, and they lifted those sanctions, which allow the Iranian oil income to go from whatever it was, 10-12 million a month to like 100 million a month.
Yeah, I mean, it was,
and so, as I said, they're flush with revenue, and they, you know, this is what they used over the what they used to arm the Gazans, the Hezbollah, and the Houthis.
I don't. This whole idea of negotiating with bad people sometimes seems to work a little bit. Mostly, it kind of doesn't. I mean, obviously, the British tried it with Hitler a couple times. That didn't work out so hot.
Well, that's what
the Russians, that's what the, for that matter.
That's what the B-2s. That's what the B-2s are.
Well, I mean, we sort of did it with the Russians when we were sworn enemies. We did manage to have a assault one and assault two that were somewhat successful. I mean, sometimes it works, sometimes it isn't, doesn't. And when you enter these negotiations, you end up with a, you know, having to come up with a little bit of trust, and I think we came up with too much. I agree with you on that, because I don't know that our people are. Same thing you tell me. These guys have no idea how nasty in the brain these people are. They think that their personalities can change them, and you know, same thing happened with Roosevelt and Stalin. For God's sake, he thought that he could somehow change the guy. There's no way you're going to change him. I mean, Truman had a much better idea of what Stalin was than Roosevelt, right?
Well, I think so, and I mean, one of the things we want to communicate to Iran is, look, and as I said, this administration has said they're not going to be allowed to get a nuclear weapon, and if we believe, as we publicly announced 2 days ago, that they're within a couple of weeks of getting of being able to manufacture, you know, nuclear devices, and we say we're not going to allow you to do that, and now we move 5 to 7 stealth bombers into a place where they can strike.
Hasn't every single president since Clinton pretty much said the same thing, though?
Well, that's what I'm saying, yeah. Tom. I don't. This is sort of unprecedented to see this many of those aircraft moved into a strike range in this area with no evident hostilities going on.
Would that be the weapon you would use, and not just a bunch of surface to air missiles?
You mean air to surface missiles?
Well, yeah, or
yeah, it's exactly,
or
it's exactly,
or stuff exactly, from a ship or a submarine.
No, because you can't fire enough missiles with enough accuracy to do
the job. Okay, I get it.
What they're going to do, I mean, what they have to do is something similar to what the Israelis did when they killed that guy in downtown Beirut, who was buried, you know, 100 feet below the surface, and who thought he was perfectly safe there. They're going to put, you know, one 2,000-pound bunker buster bomb after another on top of the target in succession. So you know, you can't do that with missiles accurately enough. But a laser guided or optically guided, you know, bunker buster can do that. And so you come in and identify those mountains or wherever those facilities are, and you put, well, you know.
Do these things have to, what the hell was the movie with Harrison Ford? Do these things have to fly over the target to do that? You don't drop them like World War II. You can, if you have, you know, I'll use the term, what they do when they blew up the guy's truck in the movie Clear and Present Danger? The bomb was dropped miles away.
Oh, that was pretty old technology. That was a laser-guided bomb.
But I'm saying, I mean, these this is not like a B-17 raid where these B-2s have to be above the bunker to drop the damn things. I mean, they can be miles away and drop them and then get their...
No, I assume that this would be a synchronized attack coming from multiple axes, which means they come in from different directions, and they strike probably over a period of hours where the dust settles, the rubble settles, and then you can put another bomb on top of it. Because they're effectively invisible to most of the radars that are going to be operating up there.
Right. What I'm saying is the plane doesn't have to be over the target.
No. But it probably would have to be in the vicinity of the target for hours, so it would be orbiting somewhere.
Okay.
And then it, you know, they release. I don't know exactly how the guidance package would work, but typically a JDAM, which is a GPS. Guided system, or some of the other kits that you can put on these things, you can drop them from, you know, 2, 3, 5 miles away, depending on the glide and the altitude of the bomb.
Yeah, they kind of fly themselves there, right? With essentially little wings.
Some of them do. So like the smaller stuff will, but these things are big, and so if you're talking about, you know, you're talking about a 10,000-pound or even a 15,000-pound weapon. That it's not going to glide very well.
It just wants to go straight down.
Yeah. So you're going to fly along, release the thing from, I don't know, whatever, 40,000 feet, it'll fly a ballistic trajectory probably for, you know, a couple of miles and guide itself in. But you're gonna have to remain in the vicinity of the target.
Okay.
And as I said, I assume this would be a synchronized, you know, kind of deal where, you know, one bomb goes in and settles the, you know, hits, makes the initial penetration, and then the next bomb goes in on top of that, and then another one goes in on top of that. But it's done over a period.
Where do these guys get the
hours?
Uranium, they make it from a nuclear plant. I mean, obviously, it was very, very difficult to do the first time you did it. World War II, you need hundreds of thousands of tons.
I don't know whether they've mined it or they're purchasing it on the black market. I don't know. But that's.
I think they have it for power, and then the whole controversy is, well, you can turn it into weapons, and we don't want that.
Well, that's where we get a lot of ours now, is out of a power plant, right?
I don't think they have a breeder reactor.
No, but I mean, you can get some plutonium out of just a regular power plant if you know what you're doing.
If you've got a breeder reactor, yes, but I don't think they have a breeder reactor. I suspect what they're doing is they were buying the stuff on them. They've amassed it over the, and again, remember, they've been doing this, you know, since the 1970s.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You know, buying the stuff, amassing it for quote unquote nuclear power generation, and then taking a chunk of it and refining it. That's what those inspections were supposed to determine.
You don't think they have a two-stage bomb, do you?
Hydrogen bomb? I don't think so. And remember, gents, you can, if you're a terrorist, you don't even need to smuggle a nuclear bomb in. You just need to smuggle in some nuclear stuff, you know.
In your backpack.
Yeah, well, a powder. And we talked about this one time. Yeah. And Greg, I don't want to get us in trouble, but we talked about driving around Chicago with like a canister of crushed nuclear fuel rods, used nuclear fuel rods, which are radioactive as all get out. And driving around Chicago, if you've got a suicide team that is willing to, you know, expose themselves to this stuff, and just dropping bits of it in various places, and then telling your city that we've irradiated the downtown, and you go in, you do a check, and oh my God, there it is, you know, hot spots in downtown of radioactivity, you evacuate the downtown, and you can. You know, you can keep it evacuated. You have to keep it evacuated until you figure out how much of the stuff is there. Or you put it in a dirty bomb. You wrap a couple hundred pounds of explosive with some of this spent nuclear fuel material, and you detonate that thing downtown. And you'll irradiate a, you know, I don't know, 10, 15 acres of area that becomes absolutely uninhabitable for, you know, a decade.
Don't get me started.
Lots of different ways. There are lots of different ways this could be played.
Don't get me started. You know, that was the story with the after 9/11, anything like that. Cities were supposed to have been able to evacuate and house people and all that stuff. I wonder where the hell all that money went, because the money's gone and nobody has any ability to do any of that stuff, do they?
I don't know. I mean, I know we have a fairly advanced nuclear at sort of all of the, so is Western Europe, a fairly advanced nuclear. The alert and detection system and response system, but if that gets, I mean, it's a lot harder than you might think to smuggle something like that in, but through without being detected. But if it got through, you know, that's one variation of them having a nuclear weapon.
Have you heard of this thing that Tulsi Gabbard is saying now?
The signal data wasn't classified.
I guess while testifying the other day, she said that Iran's not pursuing nuclear weapons, and now that everybody's pissed at her, or at least I think the rest of the cabinet.
I did not hear her saying that. That's inconsistent, as I said, with the remarks of the commander of STRATCOM.
Who said that yesterday. Yeah, they were all up in arms about that.
Was that the one that everybody was pissed off at her about on YouTube and every place?
Well, Tulsi was, I think, being questioned by someone in Congress, and she said, "No, in our estimation, they're not trying to build they're not trying to build a bomb.
They're not trying to build a bomb, or they're not trying to build an ICBM, or what?
Yeah, they're not trying to refine whatever nuclear material they have into a bomb.
That
they've been trying to do that for 20, 30 years.
That might be true as of this minute, but." You know, again,
I think that's what the rest of the cabinet is saying.
The Stratcom people are saying that might be, you know, that they are now within a couple of weeks of being able to do that refining and have fissile material that would allow them to.
Right, the 5%, whichever. If you get past 5%, then that means it's weapons grade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know what the.
Well, we have all these real enemies. Meanwhile, we're running around making.
I didn't see that remark. That's really, as I said, that's completely inconsistent with what the Stratcom guys
are saying.
That's why it
was all over. Lou, we got some real enemies, and we're running around making new enemies that used to be our friends. What's the story with that?
Which ones are you?
Canada, Greenland. I've been trying to. I should never have done this to myself, but. I'm kind of shifting the topic here to what's moving the market, these tariffs, well, what we think is. And the more I go through it, it is such a muddled piece. I don't think these guys, honestly, I don't think they know what they're doing. Well, I mean, I go through this, and I don't quite get the... I'll give you an example. One of the things with these tariffs in China, there's specific cars being made in specific countries that we're dropping this tariff on. And one of them is the BMWs made in Mexico. Something else made in Mexico. And I didn't realize that the Buick Envision, have you ever seen one of those things? It's a Buick SUV. They all look the same to me. That's a joint venture with some outfit in China, and they produce those cars in China, and they've imported, but they're Buicks. And some they sell there, and they've imported 23,000 here. Now, and there's some, they did something, with they dug up some sort of a rule out of like some alien act or some crap, but somehow or another this is a security issue and they can't import it. I don't get that at all. I mean, it says new U.S. rule required GM Ford to halt imports of any car they build in China. And they're now these things, which is evidently, General Motors and Ford would need to stop importing vehicles to the U.S. from China under proposed rule cracking down on Chinese software and hardware. A U.S. Commerce Department. I don't get what that's got to do. This rule would also affect other automakers selling or building vehicles in the U.S., such as Volvo Cars and BYD. GM sells the Buick Envision and Ford sells the Lincoln Nautilus. I have no idea what that is. Both assembled in China. In the U.S. market, Ford did not comment. In the first 6 months, GM sold about 22,000 Visions and Ford 17. As I do the math on this, Lou, I dig through the weirdest stuff. Last I checked, to assemble an automobile in here, it's less than 30 hours. Now, we've got robotics, we've got all that stuff. So, okay, you assemble it in China. Even if you're paying the people here $50 an hour, and you're paying the guy in China $5, let's call it 45 hours times 30, is like $1,300. It costs $3,000 to ship the thing here over the ocean. This math absolutely flabbergasts me. I don't get the math. But also, the thing costs $40,000, this Envision. So now it's going to be maybe $50,000. And I'm in on this because one of my final exams at the University of Chicago was to trace a tariff through stock and flow analysis on where it might go. And this was a very simple tariff on Mercedes coming in, all done in Europe. And to trace that all the way through and to try and figure out the repercussions is very, very difficult because I was pretty smart in those days. Now, I don't see what necessarily this helps. Now, this, in case Trump hasn't figured it out, most of our society that needs a car is gagging on these car prices. The used car prices are going up by the minute because one of my hobbies is I keep track of old truck prices. It's going up by the second, literally. Now, if you run this car up to $50,000, you could, if you're a dopo, you could say, well, that means they just won't bring that car in here. It also might mean, Lou, that everybody else raises the price of theirs 10 or 15% because now they can get away with it. It absolutely doesn't work.
So what? I'm not familiar with the ban. Are we banning software?
Well, first we're banning it, but we're also putting. I don't know if we're banning them, but there's definitely a 25% tariff. The ones coming from Mexico, the BMW's got a 25% tariff. I had the list here, and I got rid of it.
You probably saw the story also that we've floated the idea that we might reduce some of these tariffs in exchange for the TikTok sale.
Which I don't get the connection. I mean, is the guy let's make a deal in the White House? I mean,
yes.
But these cars, if the transmissions and the motors come from here, and first of all, they're shipped over there, well, that's probably 60 or 70% of the value of the car. Now, does that pay a tariff going over, and then the whole thing pays a tariff coming back? I guess what I'm saying is we have a bunch of Americans that if you like the guy, this all makes sense, and if you don't, you wonder, Lou, this is so friggin' complicated. Are these people actually putting pen to paper and figure out where he's going, or are they just shooting from the hip? I mean, not saying it's a bad idea or whatever. I'm just saying, have they worked it through? Like if it was a final exam, I think the answer is no.
I would have said that it's pretty hard to do this, but I'm watching what's playing out with these lawsuits and these injunction issues that are roiling the federal courts in Washington and California, and we are, when I say we, the government is moving very quickly. And it looks to me, from just an outsider's perspective, that much of this was well thought out in advance, and you know, well discussed. And I mean, they are doing things that you know, they're not reacting. This is a proactive administration. They are not reacting.
Well, that doesn't make it right, does it?
Well, I'm not. That wasn't your question.
Yeah, I know.
It was right. Your question was whether they're making it up as they go along. And the answer, I think, to that is no. I think there is a plan on this. I think it's very aggressive. One of the things that's interesting to me to watch is the reaction of people who who are typically prosecutors, for example, who look at how the government, the DOJ, is dealing with these statutes and interpreting these statutes. And, you know, as an attorney in civil practice, I am used to seeing plaintiffs take statutes and just twist the words and look at loopholes and look for variations and ambiguities that they can exploit as part of their litigation strategy. What's very unusual is to see the government doing that. And that's what's happening. I first noticed it with the Biden people,
I agree with you on the Biden people. They were wiggling their way through the law too. They probably started with Obama.
Right, but I mean, I first noticed DOJ doing it that way. And it's really not consistent with what you want. I mean, with government counsel, you're supposed to, you know, your client is the government, and you're not supposed to be out there, you know, manipulating law to the detriment of the population, but that's what's going on, and it's confounding, I think, a lot of the legal commentators who don't like Trump, who are saying, you know, this law doesn't mean that, and it's like the birthright citizenship. That law, you know, that's settled law, and the Trump people are going, says who?
Well, that's right. They're ignoring it all. I mean, it kind of started with, but I don't think, Lou, and I mean, you know, it's just not a left versus right thing. Because you are correct, the left was doing it the same way. I don't think people want that. And the more I read on the, I mean, if you listen to, you know, Powell with his, you know, 2 second comment to the population, most of which I think in this group were probably Trump voters, voted for the guy to get inflation, the price levels down, because they're gagging on it. I don't see any way with my economic upbringing. And I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. At the end of the day, with all this tariffs and all this stuff, the price of cars is going to be up another 20%, maybe 15. What kind of goal is that when 80% of the people in this country can't afford one? And what have we accomplished? I mean, it's not like Buick can build a new plant here in the next 2 weeks and make them here. And we're talking about 35 hours a car. If the transmissions and the motors are all made here at I don't know why it makes sense to ship it back and forth. Why you can save $1,500 on labor and spend a $3,000 shipping bill? I don't get.
So again, I think we're looking at this from the wrong direction.
Maybe we're looking at them in the right direction.
This is part what I see, and like I said, I don't think they're making it up as they go along. They could be, but what I see is a long-term strategic vision of economic development that this president and the people around him believe is necessary to keep the country secure, and that it that involves moving as much manufacturing and industry back here as we can in response to our failed China policy. It involves, you know, strengthening American business so that we are actually producing rather than just buying and swapping. And it is an anti globalist agenda. And so that means that we are going to take a more, I don't know what's the word, inward-looking view of our capabilities, our expenses, and I mean the message to Europe: you guys are going to have to do more of this stuff by yourself, because we're not paying for it anymore, or if we are paying for it, we're going to get more in return than we're getting right now. I think this is a part of a strategic view that is trying to readjust our economic focus. And it's doing it in a variety of ways, and how we deal with Iran, how we deal with the Middle East, all of this, I think it's looking toward a let's get disentangled from this stuff. And one way to disentangle yourself from a country that's being a bad actor is you destroy it, or you punish it to such an extent.
Well,
it's
morals,
not capable of creating problems for you anymore.
The question is, then, you better be Solomon, and I don't think this guy's Solomon. I mean, I guess what I'm saying, Lewis, I don't really disagree. I really don't disagree with a lot of this stuff. I mean, the idea of having a lot of your drugs overseas, where if India's pissed off, you don't get any more penicillin or whatever they make. I mean, I think that's all incredibly dumb too. I mean, there's not like I don't agree with a lot of what these guys are doing. I actually do. I'm just saying that when you do these kinds of things, for me having to write papers on some of this stuff and do exams, it's incredibly complicated. And I don't think the man owns a calculator or doesn't have a computer. Mentally, he's totally incapable, in my opinion, of walking this all the way through. But he doesn't.
He doesn't have to.
But I don't think the people around him, they're a bunch of yes men, I think. I mean, this is my.
I don't think that's the case. Like I said, I think this is the result of a strategic view, 40,000 foot view, and he doesn't have to know the intricacies. All he's got to be able to do, I mean, what he was elected to do, Tom, is to come forward and, you know, say, look, I want this, and this at the end of the day. How do we get there?
You and I have a disagreement on that. He was elected because he wasn't Kamala Harris. In a lot of people's opinions. And I
maybe in part.
But remember in A Hunt for Red October, where the guy had his view of he was going to go after, he was going to get Sean Connery no matter what, and finally at the end, the one guy says, "You arrogant ass, you've killed us."
Well, that was a Russian submarine commander in a fictional movie.
But I'm saying there's pause. I mean, I guess this is like me talking to you about something in the law. You're always going to be very sit there and go, wait a minute, if you do this accord, then this, there's a million little fingers of everything you do, right?
I agree with you that this is very complicated. I don't know these people, and I don't know their economic credentials to be able to work this through. What we were talking about, or what I thought you were asking me, was do they know what they're doing, or are they making it up? And the answer is, I think this is part of a plan.
Well, I don't think they're making it up. I just think they may not follow through. But if I were to ask you, what is the point of putting tariffs on Chevys made in Toronto? They're freaking Chevys. They're not Mercedes, and some of them are sold in Canada, and some are sold here. I, I'm not so sure exactly where the harm is in that.
Because we want the Canadians to do something that they're not doing.
Which is what?
Increase their defense budget, and stop getting cozying up with China, and stop making 25% of their population imported crazies from places that are hostile to Western values.
But we've been doing that.
Pardon me?
We've been doing that for 30 years.
Yeah, I agree. We're trying to put a stop to it, and we want them to stop too.
Okay.
Maybe this is a limited assessment of economics, but this is a very carrot and stick approach. Do this, or I'm going to hurt you.
In order for you and me, the chief Lou Company, to make it. I mean, you said it on the show. You said, okay, we're liable to abandon this for a tic-tac deal. What if you and I are actually following this, and we're Ford or Chrysler, and all of a sudden we're Chrysler, the dear departed Chrysler, and we're at the bank getting a loan for $1 billion for a plant, and all of a sudden, wait a minute, he might blow this tariff up for a deal with something else an hour later. Where's the long term assurance to you and I that he's not going to change his mind in a month? And because we're talking about a plant that might take 5 years to build.
Yep, I think that's an either an intended or unintended consequence of this kind of craziness. And I'm sure his people are telling him, the more instability we introduce and unpredictability we introduce into these processes, the worse it is for our investors and the kind of growth that we're trying to develop. I'm sure somebody's telling him that, and I'm sure somebody else is saying we're going to have to bite the bullet short term. And deal with this in the short term, and it's better to deal with it all up front at the start of the presidency, so that when Vance or whoever the successor is runs in 28, we're moving towards stability.
If he keeps this going like this and continues to nail some of the people that voted for him, I don't know who the Democrats will run against Vance, if it is Vance, but I think 2026 could be a disaster for these guys.
Could be.
And I don't really want to see that. I really don't want to see that because then all of a sudden we're back the other way. I mean, this is no way to govern.
So far, Tom, you know, the other side's, you know, they're right now, they're front runner, having given us one enfeebled old white guy. They're now leading with another enfeebled old white guy, and that's what they got.
Anger is going to be in the next election.
If there is anger, yeah, we'll see. I mean, I don't know, but I'm sure the strategy is pain first, and then we'll count on people forgetting this by the time the big election rolls around. At least I think that's what they're doing.
I don't know the pain seems self-inflicted. I don't know that it just comes back by itself. I mean, I don't. You're not gonna have any plants built in 2 years. I mean, I actually do. I wish we could just do it better, Lou. I mean, I really don't. I worry more about drugs being made overseas and stuff than cars, to be honest with you, and things like that. I mean, I don't know what the hell we're doing with that.
I assume this, as I said, it looks like they're making this up as they go along, but watching what is going on with DOJ and how they're responding, you know, it's something I know something about. I'm thinking these guys had this planned out. They were ready for this. And you know, we'll see how it plays out. They're going to continue to push.
Two minutes since we're also Stacks and Jacks. Boy, my conversations with my buddies last night, being one of them, the money flying into this basketball, it looks like the SEC, it wasn't very many years ago that the Big East had all kinds of people in the NCAA. Those schools are not. I've talked to two people now from Marquette. I don't know if they've got the wherewithal to compete with Auburn and the national stage.
Tom, the ACC. The ACC, I mean, you know, the ACC 10 years ago was one of the powerhouses.
They're terrible now.
They stink.
Yeah. And the Irish are one of the worst teams in there. Well, the only one that's decent is Duke. Duke and North Carolina are good.
I'm sorry?
Duke and North Carolina are good. Everybody else terrible.
Well, even North Carolina's not that good.
Right.
But they probably should have made the tournament based on their record.
What's Florida? Florida's in the SEC, right?
Florida's SEC.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got, I mean, I don't think you've seen dominance by a conference like this. Certainly not in my memory.
Well, the Big East was 11 teams, the NCAA in 2011.
But I mean, at the Sweet 16.
Right.
What are there, seven SEC teams in the Sweet 16? Yeah. I mean, that's where you see it, you know, sort of drop out.
What did you think of that? I think we sent it to you, and we talked about it yesterday. The list of all the coaches that have gotten like suspended or banned for a while.
Oh my gosh!
In the first day, they're off the hook. They're back in business.
Well, you know, this is your territory. This is money talking. We think these guys can make us winners. We really don't care about the rest of it.
I know as a bunch of sports guys, and we've had this discussion back and forth. And we love sports, and we get this. A lot of us have this weird deal where. Like, nobody gets a dime in alumni funds if their football team doesn't win, which is categorically untrue. But it is odd to me, Lou, that I should never have done this, but I looked up UCLA when they switched to the Big Ten because they got more TV rights. I don't know if it's $20 million or $30 million bucks or a lot of it. The budget for UCLA is like $11 billion. I mean, these places, Wisconsin, Madison, and University of Illinois, their budgets are like $7 billion. I don't see how the basketball teams can be wagging that dog. I mean, talk about the tail. I mean, why does UCLA give a crap about a basketball team?
But
I'm saying, and I know there's people that, I like to watch Notre Dame football and basketball, so I'm just as bad as the next person, but I also know if they didn't have a basketball team, it'd still be a pretty good school. I mean, what is the function?
But if you're trying to draw alumni dollars, Tom, your athletic program is the best vehicle to do that. Everybody watched what happened at George Mason. Remember when George Mason made the run to the Final Four?
I guess what I understand it a little bit. The people who say that, they don't focus in on this $11 billion. So what if you get another $50 million in your endowment fund? I mean, it's money, but. You know what I'm saying? These places are so big. I don't think people realize how big these places are.
Well, a lot of that money, of course, comes from an uncontrollable source, and that's the feds. And so that's changing. But the bottom line is, if you want a solid alumni donor base that's going to keep funding your program and keep your school in the news and make your school a hot school, I watched as Duke became a hot school. I was at Duke and going to law school. And I watched that happen there as that basketball program took off. And if you could do that, you got people lining up, you got people inviting you to cocktail parties, you got people patting you on the back saying, look at how we're in the news, and people love it.
Well, it's total psychic income for those people involved, those sports departments and that administration, I get that. But in terms of actual education, I never caught that wave. I mean, when I went to Notre Dame, the idea to go to some major college football game and have a great time on a Saturday, I thought was absolutely spectacular. But as soon as I went back to the dorm, I still had to do my homework for Monday. It didn't matter. Really didn't matter to me. My appendage didn't grow an inch if they won. People think it does. It doesn't. You know, I'm just saying.
On the other hand, it's a very easy thing to manifest school pride in. And I will give you a recent example. The Air Force Academy had a wrestler, heavyweight wrestler, who was very good, two-time All-American, super guy, graduated with the class of 2024.
Well, he do Olympics or no?
He went to grad school at Oklahoma State, and he had a year of eligibility there. He just upset the gold medal winner from the last Olympics.
Really?
They're calling it the greatest upset in college wrestling history. He beats the guy on points. President Trump is in attendance at the wrestling meet. So this kid's wrestling for Oklahoma State as a grad student, but he's an Air Force Academy graduate. He's a lieutenant. You know, so he stands up as he after he pins this guy, or wins on this on points, gets a takedown and wins on points.
Is it regular wrestling, that Greco-Roman?
No, it's regular wrestling, okay. Collegiate wrestling. Stands up, turns, and salutes the president because he is, after all, an officer. And as the guy said, he's my boss's 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 boss. And you know, you don't think the Air Force Academy made you know a lot of. Or garnered a lot of attention out of that. They sure did. They played that all the way. Now that school has not lost track of its academic mission, and it has no NIL. But it's an easy focal point. The entire academy community knows who this kid is now, and it's a huge thing. You can't discount that. And this again, the psychic value for that doesn't just ride with the donor class. It rides with everybody. And that's one of the reasons why they're pushing it.
I mean, I'm surely can't say that you're wrong, but take the Marquette situation. Real good team in the last 2 years. You had all these freshmen. They all pretty much all state, I think. It was pretty obvious they needed, like, a big guy. The coach isn't that big on buying people through the NIL. So this year they come back and they lose in the first round. And now their people, and Marquette's it's a small Catholic school. I mean, it's smaller than DePaul, for God's sake, and everybody's DePaul's the biggest Catholic school in the country. It's way bigger than Notre Dame. People don't realize, but it is. Now everybody's starting to think, oh, should we pony up like all this money to have gone out and bought a big man? You know, at some level, should you recruit a big? You want to be competitive. You want to see your team win. I get all that. Well, I mean, God, I've been in sports my whole life, but are you going to change the nature of your school to become a Calipari school? I not everybody wants that.
A lot of people do.
Well, I know, but
and,
I'm saying
a lot of them have money.
And I think you're going to end up with probably 70 or 60 schools that do, and the rest of them are going to say no, we're not going to.
Well, we've already talked about that. That's where we're headed.
But if you do, okay, we got to go. But
I see Wayne in queue.
Then we're going to be all these kids now. They're just going to be free agents. They're just going to be pros.
That's where we're headed.
That's where we're headed. All right, bud. SP Futures down 8 and NASDAQ Futures up 55. Greg, you want to go right to Wayne? Wayne, you with us? Greg, are you with us?
Everyone's here.
All right. Is Wayne... Wayne, unmute thyself. He's there. He'll pop in a second. What'd you think of all that, Greg? I mean, the bomber's all done. I remember... Diego Garcia, years ago, we were going to fight somebody, and all the B-52s went down there, and they were Diego Garcia. I don't know if it was Vietnam or what it was, but it's in the middle. We have him. I heard something.
I am here. Right. Sorry about that.
Have you heard
it's
that?
It's still early in the morning here, too, on the East Coast.
It's later on the East Coast, for God's sake.
Yeah, it's still early for me, you know.
Well, poor Lou is an hour early. He's mountain time.
I'm in Florida where, you know, people get up at the crack of noon.
Yeah. What have you heard anything about the all these B-2s being moved down to Diego Garcia? Is that a bit of it on your radar?
Yeah, I've read about it. It happens quite a bit. It's always that they're getting ready to bomb Iran. I mean, I think this whole Diego Garcia with the planes goes back to when John McCain was singing that song "Bomb, Bomb, Bomb, Iran." I don't put much into it. You know, they move these assets around quite a bit. There's something else going on in Diego Garcia, though, that I think might be the real reason. The British government, this base was built back in the early '70s, we moved the indigenous islanders off that that atoll in the Indian Ocean, and the British government just made an agreement with the government of Mauritius, which claims those islands as its own territory, that it would cede all those islands, including Diego Garcia, back to Mauritius. Now that was a deal struck between the UK and Mauritius. Trump, of course, has said he doesn't recognize it. And this may just be a show of force against both
So there's more than one island. There's a bunch of them.
There's a whole bunch of islands. Yeah. Now, not all of them were inhabited. Some of them were, and I think the people that lived on Diego Garcia were basically working on copra plantations. It was like a coconut thing. So they got moved off of there against their wishes. So I think that may be what's behind this.
Is it only our base? It's not a British base, it's just ours?
It's supposedly a joint U.S. British base, but the only British the only British element that's at that base is like a British liaison officer, because officially it's called the British Indian Ocean Territory, but that is going to come to pass now with the UK saying, well, we're going to cede this British Indian Ocean Territory back to the government.
Is there a serious harbor there too, or just an air base?
There is. No, there's a harbor. It can handle, you know, deep draft naval vessels.
So you can pull an aircraft carrier in there to rebuild.
Not a carrier though. But like landing craft, LSTs, things like that, frigates, destroyers. It's basically most of the island is an airstrip. It can handle these. It used to be able to handle B-52s.
So it's just like it's almost like Guam, only Guam's bigger, right?
Yeah, and there's no, I mean, they moved the indigenous population off of Diego Garcia, so it's really just U.S. Military personnel, a lot of contractors.
How far is it from anywhere? Was it like between India and Africa?
Oh my God, it's close to 800 to 1,000 miles from Mauritius itself, which claims the territory. But yeah, it's halfway. If you looked at India and then drew a line straight down through Sri Lanka and the Maldives Islands, then you would find Diego Garcia at the end of the chain.
Really?
Yeah. There's not much there.
Well, I remember years ago we sent a bunch of B-52s down there for some reason. I forget what the hell it was.
Yeah, that, I think that must have had something to do with Iran, too. This is like a perennial deal. But I almost had a chance to go to Diego Garcia, but I decided... they said, look, you got to do some training down there. You can either go there or have the people come come to Subic Bay in the Philippines. So I said, yeah, let them come to the Philippines.
Well, Subic Bay was huge, right? We had a dry dock and everything there, right?
Massive base. Yeah.
Are we trying to get some of that back? Is that the deal?
We may be in there, I think, in some respect. The Philippines government turned it into a major cargo shipping port, and I think they've been fairly successful at it. We started to have problems because I think the Russians moved in there at one point in time, and I think they've been kicked out.
But it was bigger than Pearl, right?
Oh yeah. And it wasn't just this was a naval base where you could pull carriers in.
They had dry docks and everything for huge vessels there too, right?
And it also had the naval air station, QB Point, and we had bases, of course, all around the Philippines, but Subic was the biggest one of them all.
Are we out of everything over there, or just Subic?
We're supposedly involved in training Philippines military forces in some of the other islands. So we've got some sort of a military presence there. We've also been aiding them in their showdown with China over these islands in the South China Sea, which, like, I think six or seven countries are laying claim to various islands. China says they all belong to them, but there's been some issues between the Chinese Coast Guard and the Philippines Navy on some of the disputed islands, where I think they've used like hoses on water hoses on each other and stuff like that. It hasn't gotten into like a shooting war, but it's gotten darn near close.
Well, they create an island and then say they want 25 miles around the island, right? Or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah. What it is, there's a bunch of reefs. Some of them are above sea level. Some of them are depending on what time of the day is and the tides are above sea level, and then they're not. So the Chinese have gone in there and taken some of these reefs and built them up to be, you know, I think on one of them they've actually created a small city. But yeah, this is their attempt to lay claim to the entire South China Sea.
Well, I guess if you can populate the whole ocean with a bunch of islands and then say you got 100 miles off each island, it's all yours.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thought.
Of course, the Philippines is playing their game, you know, like Trump with the Gulf of Mexico and the Gulf of, become Gulf of America. The Philippines say, no, it's not the South China Sea. It's the Western Philippine Sea.
You think Trump knows or cares that the Gulf of Mexico was named the Gulf of Mexico like 200 years before there was a country of Mexico?
I don't think he's aware of much of anything. He said, like, take Greenland, for example. Denmark landed some people there 200 years ago. Try, like, it was the 14th century. And seriously, didn't a guy named Columbus land a few people here? We went ahead and claimed the entire Western Hemisphere.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
you claim and claim. Why not? We claimed the moon, didn't we?
Yeah, exactly.
It's our flag on the moon. The first thing we did is stick a flag in there, right? I don't know. I was talking to Lou about it. I don't want to go into any of the details, but the more I dive into it, first I get really, really bored. And secondly, I can't get over the complications of it. This tariff stuff, I don't think anybody knows where this all lands. I mean, especially when if you're trying to get prices down for people, the people that voted for you, honestly, if you drive up the price of automobiles only 10%, what are you doing to your population, for God's sake?
Yeah, you know, the number 25 is being used more and more from what I'm gathering from people I talk to in Washington. 25 meaning the 25th Amendment. A lot of what's going on, there's a feeling that, you know, this guy's got to be moved.
But the cabinets, they got to do that.
The 25th Amendment with the last Trump administration was a hard sell, although there were people in that cabinet who supported it. But with this cabinet, absolutely, I can't think of one person who would, you know, I mean, they're all total. I mean, he did that by design. They're all total loyalists to, you know, even Marco Rubio, who's considered like the one, you know, forget him, too, because, you know. He's Marco Rubio.
Well, I mean, you don't really want people around you that aren't onto your game. I mean, nobody would want that. I mean, you know, it's hard to put a bunch of people there that don't like you with the guys you got to work closest with. I mean,
yeah.
A little of that goes a long way. The idea is to get just enough. I mean,
yeah. Unless the guy who's in charge is totally going nuts.
I keep talking about it. I'm concerned about the complexity of this stuff, and I don't understand the math for the companies either. Wayne, I was doing the thing yesterday. The Ford is the that was the name of the damn thing. The little SUV they make in China. The Ford Envision, is that the name of it? They import a bunch here and they sell the rest in China. Well, even if last I checked, and I'm going to repeat myself, I know. It's like 30 hours to assemble a car. It's not even that. It's more like 25. I mean, this is after you got the transmissions and stuff you put in. I'm talking about assembling it. Now, I don't... even if you save $50 an hour doing it in China, it's less than half the cost of shipping it back over here. I mean, I don't get the math on any... I can see where Ford would want a joint venture with China because there's a billion people there. I mean, are we saying now that that's wrong, that nobody should be over there? I mean... We couldn't wait to get people over there even in Trump's first administration. I mean, we're giving this cross signals to all these businesses.
I'm concerned about Elon Musk's influence in all these decisions too, because I mean, there's no 25th Amendment for him. When I think clearly he's crazier than a
he's not necessarily around restrooms. I don't know why I don't worry about him, because I have a feeling he's going to take enough of the press and Trump's going to dump him. I think he's a short timer. So I don't worry about him as much.
Yeah, he has his own deals with China too. Now it's been reported that he's he has some deal with China and on his manufacturing of his vehicles, and he's looking for all sorts of incentives from China, financial incentives. So is Trump going after Ford because Musk is trying to push Tesla over Ford's electric vehicles? I mean, this gets into a real ethical issue, I think.
These guys don't have any ethics. They're very immoral.
That's true.
I mean, and they're not the only ones. I mean, there are a lot of Democrats the same way. I mean, you keep saying it's immoral. They don't know what you're talking about. I mean, there's no...
Yeah.
We're past that. And, you know, you reach a point, and this is what I kind of wanted to talk to you today about, because we talk about the other policies with everybody else, but it reaches kind of a stage where you mentioned last week that, you know, not that long ago, your Senate and your House had a pretty serious ethics thing. And if you talk to somebody younger, I mean, Greg is, I don't know if he's listening on the board over there, but if you talk to somebody younger, it's kind of one thing, you know, and you and I are older, so we kind of get this. When I was on the trading floor, and we were very concerned that it was a straight game, that, you know, people didn't trade stuff at a half when somebody was at 3-ace. A, it's stealing, in my opinion, and everybody else's opinion. But B, if you ever got the reputation that these guys are a den of thieves, which I don't think we ever did, and we were very careful not to, then no matter who you are, me, who never took a dime from anybody down there, I'm tired with the same brush. And somewhere along the line, when you've got... I mean, everybody's convinced now that everybody is Nancy Pelosi, everybody is Schumer, everybody's McConnell, everybody goes there and all they do is enrich themselves and they don't give a crap about being governing anybody about anything other than lining their own pockets. Well, I don't think that everybody there is like that. And I really don't think that. But somewhere along the line, the other people got to say, when I walk down the street, I'm tired of them calling me a crook, because you are a crook. I mean, how does a guy like, I think he's pretty straight, how does a guy like Dick Durbin put up with this crap if he's not doing the same thing? I mean, maybe I don't think he is. I've never heard anything about the guy's got $1 billion. How do you let these other guys take your name down with them? Somehow or another, there's no consciousness of that I've seen in the last 20 years. If you're a crook, that makes me a crook, so I'm not going to let you be a crook. I mean, or is this just my Southside upbringing with the nuns? I mean, I don't know. Am I just totally off the wall here?
Yeah, I was covering Congress back in like the early 90s, 99, start 90, 91. And, you know, I remember, yeah, there were some so-called scandals, but I mean, it was like minor compared to this stuff that's going on. I mean, I can remember when Senator Bob Packwood from Oregon, a fairly decent guy. He was believe it or not, a liberal Republican. But he got he went before the Senate Ethics Committee because he got, you know, kind of handsy feely with some female assistants, aides in his office, and he was basically run out of the Senate and run out of town on that, and. You compare that with what goes on now with some of these. I think there are certifiable lunatics now in Congress. This Marjorie Taylor Greene is. I mean, I don't know. I would check her for rabies because I mean, she, when they talk about decorum in the houses of Congress, I you know, she just doesn't come up in that sort of conversation.
Well, but you can't let it. I mean, I would not want to walk down the street every day and say, "What do you do? I trade on the trading floor. Well, you're a crook." I wouldn't want that.
No. I mean, you know, we were talking last week. I think it mentioned Dan Rostenkowski. Yeah, look, that was considered a major ethics issue. But remember, that had to do with the House Post Office, which apparently was also acting as a payday loan operation. You know, I mean, okay, it was unethical, but was it outside influence? No, the House Post Office was run by, you know, career employees of the House of Representatives. And it was bad, but back then it was considered a major ethical issue.
I think they moved him out because they couldn't push him around.
Yeah. I mean, and look, was he the only one? No, everybody was getting those payday loans. Everybody else, everyone was, you know, getting cash for postage stamps. I mean, that's essentially what the whole thing was about. They, you know, because they couldn't go out and, you know, trade in stocks and get you know, special deals. This was all done internally.
Were these all gentlemen's agreements where people didn't trade? Or were there actually? I mean, you know, in my business, sometimes if you know, over an adult beverage, I'll say, hey, you know, if you look, there's never been, quote, a law passed by our Congress, signed by our president, defining insider trading.
That's right. There won't be.
There won't be.
Hasn't been one, and there won't
I'm
be.
I'm not talking about in Congress. I'm talking just in general. It's the SEC's over a period of time. They've kind of gone on and prosecuted people and done stuff, and there's a massive, what do you call it, when there's, you know, judgments of courts going back forever. There's all kinds of history to their definition and this and that, but there's nothing you can point to that is, quote, law. I mean, I guess there's something that says the SEC can define these kinds of things. I mean, it's that kind of a law, but there's never anything where. But I mean, when you know, people weren't supposed to trade when they were in one of these offices, and Cheney basically said, "Screw you guys, I'm trading." And there wasn't anything somebody could point to and say, "Well, that means you're coming out in cuffs." But a lot of stuff, I think, what Trump is doing, I don't know. He's convinced none of this stuff is really a law. It's not. It's some sort of a convention or way people used to act. And by the way, if I want to act another way, there's nobody in the way. There's no. The idea that Supreme Court has no enforcement is kind of weird. I mean, what kind of constitution is that? But doesn't seem to have, do they?
Yeah, well, there's an executive level office of government ethics, which is supposed to be independent, and Trump, of course, tried to fire the head of that, and I think he was ordered to be rehired and gotten an accord. The guy may have just said, "I'm tired of this," and left. And the inspectors general are supposed to also serve the function of looking at, you know, compliance with the ethics and standards. Of course, we know that Trump fired all the major inspectors general. So right now, I don't think there's even a modicum of oversight when it comes to ethics issues.
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, was there ever any need for it? Was there ever, I mean, is he way off the playing field, or were the other guys just making a mockery of it?
It's been going on for a long time. It goes back to, I remember, when the columnist Drew Pearson found out that a guy named Owen Brewster, a senator from Maine, was basically on the take, Pearson wrote about it in his column, and Brewster denied it, but Brewster wound up, I think, either resigning or being defeated in the election. I think later on he was indicted. So that's that it, again, well, in that case, it was the press that held these guys to account. And I'm not sure the press is there anymore.
I don't think it is either. But they're owned by, well, everybody thinks that, you know, Instagram is, or X is the press. No, it's not. Just a bunch of people chirping.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's like, when I first got into journalism, that would be like saying a restroom wall at a rest stop on the New Jersey Turnpike was the press.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, it's a, yeah. But I don't have any idea of hiring people to, I don't see how you get a Woodward and those kind of guys, you know, taking a story for like a year anymore.
Yeah, although I got to say this, the editor of The Atlantic, Jeff Goldberg, I think he's showed a little bit of that old Woodward Bernstein and others, Jack Anderson medal when he got invited on this group chat about, you know, bombing Yemen.
What's the story on that? I mean, I've heard, I mean, I,
well,
some people say it wasn't even classified, it was so early, and other people say it's a big deal. What, I mean, I've heard every version of it.
So Signal is a basically a commercially available app that allows you to conduct so-called encrypted chats online. And, of course, because it's commercially available, the government and DOD and the National Security Agency says you cannot use this for classified communications. They have other systems that are to be used for that. So this Signal app was basically being used to talk about the attack on these Houthi targets in Yemen.
Well, who's supposed to be in the chat? I mean, were the people named or anybody?
They were all almost what's called the Principals Committee, which is these are members of the cabinet that have some role to play in national security matters.
So it's not everybody. It's not the Department of Transportation guy. It's not, or
not him. Although there were some weird people. Somebody tried to say, it might have been Mike Waltz, the national security advisor, tried to say, well, the JG, Jeff Goldberg, it turned out that was supposed to be this guy who's the U.S. Trade Representative. Now, why would he have been, you know, I mean, it's like they're making it worse for themselves when they start lying and coming up with these crazy theories. They just don't want to admit that they conducted a major military operation. And worse, this guy, Witkoff, who's Trump's envoy to Ukraine and all these other places, he was sitting in Moscow when he was on that chat. And you know, like the Russians don't have the ability to, listen in on that. This was a major failure. But now it's being pointed out that this Project 2025 of the Heritage Foundation, they recommended that the Trump administration not use any sort of official secure means of communications, because it would all become part of the government record. It would all eventually go into the archives. The one thing you can do with Signal is you can set on Signal when all the message traffic disappears. And I think Waltz may have set that for like 7 days, to disappear after 7 days. But that's in violation of the Presidential Records Act, and I don't know how many other laws that say that records have to be preserved.
I don't think these guys don't care about any law, which, you know.
No. And it looks like Hegseth, he's the one who's really doubling down on it, saying, look, you know, when you know, I was talking about, you know, F-16 strikes and the time they were going to hit. Of course, all this stuff is classified. Trump says it's not, but you know, what does Trump know? I mean, he doesn't know anything. So Hegseth is, the more he argues about it, it's been pointed out that from people who have lived with spouses and whatnot, who were alcoholics, that he's showing all the signs of this sort of desperation in his denials, and he's attacking.
Why don't they just say they screwed up?
He's attacking Jeffrey Goldberg. It's like, hey, Jeffrey Goldberg was just, hey, wait a minute, what's this? Yeah, Jeffrey Goldberg also
happened? He just turned his computer on one day and the thing was sitting there. I'm not sure how this works.
Yeah, he says, look, I'm on his chat. Turns out he was already a person on Mike Waltz's list communicate this way over Signal. So he says, "What's this? What's going on
here?"
So
Signal was not supposed. All right. So Signal is not supposed to be used for this kind of stuff. And this guy was This guy was on Signal for other reasons. Then when they used Signal, he just popped right on with the thing.
Can you imagine seeing this discussion of a military strike, and he's seeing who these people are?
It's like you calling into Stocks and Jackson. We're talking about nuking Iran.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, you know, it's like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it'd be like having John Ratcliffe, the CIA director, in on our chat right now, you know, and he starts talking about, yeah, we're going to do this. We invade Greenland next Thursday. You know, so Goldberg saw that there were some active CIA officers on this chat, and he decided, well, I'm not going to say anything about these guys. So he showed more judgment, a journalist who wasn't even supposed to be on the thing, than any of the people who were on the chat.
It's we're in a political situation, and then, you know, but a lot of the people who voted for this guy, I mean, whatever the motivations people are back and forth, and I understand the motivations of. Democrats had not only a candidate that wasn't very good, she didn't even win the right to run. So I mean, the reason why people voted for him and are still saying he's better than the other choice, I get all that. I mean, I really do. The Democrats still don't seem to have found any kind of leadership in 100 days or how long it's been, longer than that since the election. And I don't know, you know, but that doesn't mean they won't win the House back in now 20 months. I mean,
depending on how these open seats go, there's two here in Florida next week, one in Arizona and one soon to be in New York. If the Democrats take those open seats, the Democrats will be controlling the House maybe in a month.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying
it's
is
that it's close.
But at some point, yeah. And the thing I've always, as much as I have issues with the man, I've always had an amazing respect for Trump's ability to understand what the common man wants to hear. I mean, to say the man does not have a skill set is really wrong. He does. I mean, I'm really jealous of what his skill set is. I mean, he knows just what to tell people where it makes them hate the other side and like him. But as perceptive as he is about stuff like that, he must know that one of the biggest reasons why people are putting him in, people who don't know the inflation stuff as well maybe as I do and realize that most of it came on his watch, not Biden's, but nobody's going to go through that. Nobody cares. And I could have a discussion on blue in the face. I'm not going to get through to anybody. But the point is, he has to realize that 80% of the population around now, maybe 85, is gagging on this price level. Now, we heard Powell say, we're not going to worry about it. Going forward, we're just going to try and keep inflation at 2%, even though if it's 3%, we're not going to care about that either. So that message wasn't so hot. Plus, the stock market liked it because it means they're going to put more money in the system. But at the end of the day, of all this basically farting around with these tariffs, and I'm trying to learn something about it, and you'll hear from the people, and it's hard to learn something about it. At the end of the day, if he drives the prices of cars up another 10%, which looks to me where they're going, it won't be 25, but say it's 8 or 10, we have an amazing shift in this population. What percentage of people can afford a car now at 40 or 50,000? If it's 60, I mean, I know what the prices of used cars are. I know the cars I see being fixed belong in the graveyard. I mean, it's been an entire shift in how the bottom 80% of the population. I mean, to talk about people not wanting to go back to work. Well, hell, if you've been home for 3 years and all of a sudden you got to go out and get a car, they better be doubling your salary to go back to work. I mean, there's more to this than people just being lazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really surprised because he usually is really good at picking up on all this stuff. But if he ends up with all this crap and it's September and just the price of every car out there is now, you know, 10 or 15% higher, dragging used cars right with it, I don't see how that settles into his popularity, because a real lot of people said, we got to put it back in to get rid of the inflation. And guess what? It's not happening.
No, and the funny thing is, even though eggs are actually unaffordable for a lot of people right now, I don't see the news media covering it as much as they did when, you know, Biden was president. And yeah, eggs went up because of the avian flu. But I don't see anything on the price of eggs today. All I see is, oh, Trump's gone to other countries begging for their eggs. He went to Europe. He went to, oddly, he didn't go to Canada, which is in a position maybe to help us with the eggs. And they're still very inexpensive in Canada. But, and the latest was he said, oh, Turkey and South Korea have agreed to send us their eggs. I don't think I want
and
any
what, by ship?
No, I don't want any eggs from either one of those places.
Well, I mean, there's a difference. You know, I don't expect you to be. The most intelligent thing that Milton Friedman probably ever said was, inflation is always and every time a monetary phenomenon. You shouldn't look, if you're a monetarist anyway, at the price of eggs or something like that, or fuel or something, and say that's causing inflation. It's not. And it's really hard to understand. Because if all of a sudden, you know, your money supply was normal and people had, it was growing at the same price as the, or the same rate as, if all of a sudden eggs shot up and people went in, they either would say, they're too high, I'm not buying them, okay, which drops, not the demand, it drops the quantity demanded, or they'll say, now because I just paid $8 for eggs, I can't buy this thing of cheese. So if your economy is steady and you're not pouring money into the system to account for it, the price of eggs only just means that the price of everything else drops by just a little bit. So
right. It
doesn't cause, it seems like it does, but yeah. It doesn't cause the inflation. The inflation is if all of a sudden the government says, all right, we're going to raise the money supply by 20% to make up for the fact that eggs are more expensive. That's when everybody's got more dollars in their pocket chasing the same amount of goods. There's a massive difference between saying egg prices are up and that it causes the general inflation. They're totally separate issues. And I'm going to say that 1% of society understands that. Just saying.
Right, and I think some of the supermarket chains are being accused of gouging, too. And that's a whole different issue. And that gets into, you know, the whole ethics issue. We don't have the regulations now to look at price gouging. The one area of the Justice Department where everybody was more or less fired was the one that looks into, you know, consumer fraud.
I don't think you're, when people look at your stores, I mean, I try and be a half-ass economist. When I hope maybe I learn stuff from you. Hopefully, maybe you can learn something from me once in a while. If you look at, I don't know how it is in Florida, Chicago, you drive, not in the city, which has, you know, areas where there are no food stores or anything for reasons other than food stores. But if you go to the burbs, where Audrey lives in Moreland, I'm going to say 2 miles, make that 3 miles, there's got to be 6 or 7 different major food places that are selling stuff. There's Meijer's, there's Jewel's, there's Caputo's, there's Pete's, there's Mariano's, there's Whole Foods. The competition there, the margin, on the average margin of a food store is what, like 4%, 5%, 10 maybe? And people look for, how the hell do you gouge there? When other places, what's Apple's margin, 65%? We're not even on the same planet.
Well, here in Florida, we have competition, but the biggest chain food chain here is Publix, which, I mean, there are people that will shop nowhere but Publix. cops here. Now we have some cops. I found at Aldi's, for example, they have actually made a conscious decision to keep their egg prices as low as they possibly can. But not a lot of people shop at Aldi's for some reason. I guess they can't figure out how you put the quarter in the shopping cart.
That's because all you old farts are running away with the basket.
No, I've mastered it. I know Tucker Carlson, when he was in Russia, was saying, look, they got this thing where you put a coin in and you take the, he said, yeah, we don't have anything like that in the United States. Obviously, he's never been to an Aldi's. We've had them here for, what, 20 years.
Who even has a quarter anymore in their packet?
Well, I always keep my Aldi's quarter in my car, you know, for said purpose.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is people always look at the oil companies as colluding. Out of all the competition in the world, I can't think of something that's more competitive than oil of the stuff that we normally see. It's way different than like medicine, hospitals, drugs. I mean, we're not even on the same planet.
Right.
I just, you know, how this all works its way through, but if he doesn't, this group, a lot of people elected him for a reason, and if they perceive the inflation isn't getting anywhere, I don't know. I mean, it's not like they're going to go back to Kamala Harris. I mean, I get that part, but people are not going to be happy, and I don't know if that means in the midterm there's a big turnaround or anything like that. Go back. Now that it just registered in my feeble brain. What is the story with the representatives? Are that close?
It's like right now, something like 218 to 214. Anyway, if just a few seats shift now in the House, it'll be the Democrats by one seat. If it goes that way now. There was a Pennsylvania election, special election the other day, Tuesday, this past Tuesday, for an open seat in the Pennsylvania State Senate. And this was in a district that went for Trump by 15 percentage points. The Democrat won this past Tuesday.
Whoa.
It was close, but he won. So this was totally unexpected in a pretty red area. Pennsylvania.
Well, just so everybody understands, and I think do, but just in case they don't, if Trump were to appoint a representative, say to the cabinet, or any president, or the guy croaks, or she croaks, or something, that seat, since it's quote the people's house,
right?
The governor cannot appoint somebody to fill that spot.
Not for the House. The governor.
There's got to be. Is there any time on the election, or can they take as long as they want?
Well, we've seen that play out here. Here in Florida, the governor sets the time for the election, and so in some states the governors have drawn it out. Now, there's a vacancy in Texas, for example. The Democratic incumbent Sylvester Turner from Houston, former Mayor Houston, died right after he was listening to Trump's speech a couple of weeks ago. He leaves a speech and he drops dead in one of the tunnels that connects the Capitol building.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, go figure. So the governor there, Abbott, has really, he's drawing it out because he does, you know, he wants to see the
but you this, know, you lose the vote. I mean, you.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's really like a majority in the House now. It's supposed to be, what, 435, or what was it? How many people are in the House? Is it 435?
435, yes.
Yeah, so if there's five people gone, you know, then the majority is, you know, 215 or 216,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. It affects the overall, yeah. And it's down, it's actually that close right now, yeah.
But if a senator croaks or gets, the governor gets to replace the person, but what are the caveats?
Well, it used to be the governor could appoint anybody. Well, you know what happened to Blagojevich in Illinois, right?
Yeah.
He, he was trying to sell the seat.
No, I was asking if the guy wins the election, he's in for 6 years.
Yeah.
He croaks or gets appointed the next day.
If the guy dies right after he's sworn in, there has to be a special election held. I think it might be within 2 years. It's based on the state law, though. But here in Kentucky,
but he doesn't switch to the in 2 years. He doesn't switch to the different schedule. He stays on the same 6 year schedule.
Yeah, right, exactly. And so in Kentucky has a Republic. They have a Democratic governor. Odd for Kentucky. And a lot of people are thinking, well, Mitch McConnell might be kicking off any day now. So Governor Beshear, the Democrat, under the old system, he could appoint, a Democrat to the. Now what's happened is the state legislature in Kentucky has said, no, we'll provide the governor with a list of like three Republicans. He's got to pick from that list. Now, the governor's saying that's totally unconstitutional. It's against the state constitution, and so he may say, well, we're gonna let the Supreme Court test this one out. So,
well, how's the Supreme Court if the state says he gets to do it, but nowhere does the guy get. But, well, the lady in Georgia, how long was she appointed for? The lady who sold all her stock after she came out of the COVID meeting.
Yeah. Yeah, she was in there for a couple of weeks, wasn't it?
She was there for at least a couple of years, though.
I forget whose seat she filled, but in that case, there were two special elections in Georgia. There was one the seat that's currently held by the African American senator from there, and then her special election was actually at the beginning of the year. His was like in December, and hers was in January. So yeah, there's you can play with the calendar.
So you're saying if all of a sudden
Senator Warnock is okay. Who I was trying to
think of. So if all of a sudden, I don't think it's going to happen, but if it does, the House, these two, three people get elected from the Democratic side, I don't know what the chances of that are. What? No, all of a sudden they wing this guy to the chairmanship out of his office and or the speaker and with the new person?
There's two Democratic vacancies from the guy that died in the passageway after the Trump speech, and then Rahalva died of cancer in Arizona. So there's two Democratic seats vacant. There's two Republican seats vacant here in Florida, one that was filled by Matt Gaetz before he resigned, and that's in a very deep red. That's Pensacola, that's the panhandle, that's deep red. But because of what's going, it's also a lot of veterans, and because of what Trump and Musk has done, they're saying that one could be in play. And the other one by Mike Waltz, the guy that had the signal chat, he left to become national security advisor. That one's very close. That's in a seat that was formerly held by Ron DeSantis, the governor here, and they're saying that one is showing that the Democrat could win. Elise Stefanik in New York, Trump's appointed her to be UN ambassador, but Mike Johnson don't want to let her go yet because he needs her vote. And the minute she resigns to take the UN job, that one becomes open, and it's another area where there's a lot of veterans. So,
well, what's the bottom line with the Veterans Administration? Are they laying off like doctors and stuff, or who are they laying off?
Yeah, no, it's across the board. It's doctors, it's people who clean the instruments after operations. People that are work in the pharmacy and order prescription drugs for veterans. It's mental health people. My God, they got rid of the suicide prevention hotline, for example.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's...
A boatload of veterans commit suicide.
Yeah. Huh?
A real lot of veterans commit suicide.
I know. And they some of them have done these TikTok videos saying, look, I'm, I called, I can't get through. I mean, these are really heart-wrenching things. And And Muskie just keeps dancing around like, who cares?
Well, I mean, there's...
I would point out a lot of the veterans that have to seek mental, help, have mental health issues. Some of them were trained as snipers,
Yeah, well, one of the ways, that you can take care of the health of the population is the people that are in bad shape just don't help them. They all close. One of the ladies has been on the show a couple of times, a good friend of Audrey's, and hopefully a friend of mine. She's, you ever hear of Fisher House as a veteran?
Oh, yes.
Well, she's, Fisher House, the money for the way it works, and we have had some people on the show that actually have donated her money. They're building a new one up in Great Lakes. There's one here in Hines, but they're building a new one up at Great Lakes. And for those that weren't on when she was on, it's essentially a Ronald McDonald House for veteran families. So if you have to go somewhere for a week for your husband or wife or whoever it happens to be, if they're fitting them for a new, leg because they've got theirs blown off, you might have to be there a week or two. And this house, you get to stay there, meals and stuff, like Ronald McDonald House. You don't have to pay for a hotel room and those kinds of things. And everybody's kind of in it together, and evidently it works out, from what I understand, terrifically. And the person, and she is in charge of the money for the house itself, comes from the Fisher Fund. This guy Fisher left all his money a few years ago. Comes from the Fisher Fund to build the place, but once it's built, it's kind of turned over to the local people that have to raise the money for the meals and all the other stuff, for the sheets and all the other crap. So anyway, but she's done a lot of work at the veteran stuff for a long time, and which isn't to say that every person there works a solid 8 hours. I don't know, but what I do know is we had one benefit where this guy is what do you call musicians that used to be like in a band back in the 60s. They know every song on earth and can still play them, and they're older. They're like a Ronnie Rice, those kinds of people. He was with New Colony 6. This guy was with somebody else. But
the royalties that they get?
No, they just go and they'll do a if you had a party for like the CBOE or something, they'll play every song of the 60s and 70s everybody likes.
And my friend Andy once had Cousin Brucey, the old DJ from New York, volunteered to DJ his birthday party. So
this guy, he would go to veterans' homes a couple days a week and play music for these guys, and they love it. And she would go constantly before she was in charge of this thing. I don't know how many hours a week, but there's a gazillion volunteers in these veterans. I don't think they're that overstaffed. I mean, I don't know. I've not been in one, but I don't think they're that overstaffed where you get rid of 30% of the people and that causes them. And I don't know how many they're getting rid of, but do they seem overstaffed to you?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, the issue is not every veteran who could avail themselves of veterans' services opt to use them. I had a friend who worked for the VA in Washington, and he said, my God, if every veteran decided they wanted to use their veterans' benefits, it would tax our system. So a lot of I know veterans out there that said, no, I've never been to the VA.
Well, I have a cousin who, I don't know, and I don't think he's not exactly rolling in scratch. I keep trying to get him to take his prescriptions to the veterans, and he's not that mobile. He never does. And I mean, you got to be paying five times as much.
I know. I don't know. I had a friend who served in the Air Force back in the late 50s, and he was ran into some financial issues. And I said to him, I said, John, let me take you up to the VA hospital in Washington and talk to the eligibility people. And I did. And he went and met with them. He said, yeah, they're gonna send me my prescriptions.
I think the deal is if you have a, I won't say regular doctor, I did say regular doctor. He says, okay, you need, Lipitor, whatever the hell it happens to be.
Yeah.
I think you have to see a veteran's doctor, show him your charts, and say the guy prescribed Lipitor, and he's going to go, well, that's what he should have subscribed, and I'll give you the veteran. I mean, it's not like they're, I think you do have to go see one, but it's not like they weren't idiots.
And even the the service-connected disability thing is the more they look at what happened to guys in the 50s and 60s and stuff they were exposed to from Agent Orange in Vietnam to, you know, radioactive material in some of these bases where they keep these nuclear weapons. Yeah, that's, you know, and this is what Biden did with the PACT Act. People that were exposed to toxic substances like myself, breathing in what was very similar to, you know, the coal mine dust. In a facility that produced this stuff. There's a lot of veterans that were not getting any help, and at least Biden got that through, you know, bipartisan support in Congress.
You look at, you know, people in the Chicago area just observing, there's a lot of people that are getting no help anywhere. And plus, some of them seem to have a drug history, which I don't even know if you can fix them. But, you know, I there's a piece of paper somewhere buried in our office we'll find someday. Wayne, it was somebody, how the hell the guy did it, I have no idea. I think it was a guy. He went through and he looked at all the people, how he found out everybody who had been in Vietnam, not just soldiers, but people who did salesmen and God knows what else, were over there, and suppliers. This is got to be 15 years ago. He tracked all these people, and he said actuarially, given the person and the age and the fact they were in, there must be some place where you could, if you went to Vietnam, you had to be registered someplace, even if you're a supplier or whatever.
Yeah.
And he said it was 300,000 people were dead than should have been actuarially. Not just people in the Army and in the Navy, but it was just suppliers. Was it drugs? Was it Agent Orange? He goes, or was it stress? He goes, the number is incredible. That how many, you know, if you went over there and you were selling, you know, plane parts, you're almost as likely to be dead as somebody who's in the Army.
And the other thing, in Vietnam, in Southeast Asia, there were diseases that were not even known to the military when we sent people over there. I mean, you got these rare tropical diseases. Yeah, and, you know, after the fact, they started looking, oh, maybe it, you know.
Maybe this wasn't a good one. We should let the guy swim up that river.
Yeah, or you know, people got like trench. I think it's called trench foot. You know, with that, walking around in the swamps with their boots on, and then there's stuff that gets in there, and it's, you know, awful.
So, yeah. What time's your tee off today?
Well, I think I'm not going to go play golf today.
Hey, next week or the week after, track your buddy down. The buddy is on.
Well, we'll get Andy on. Yes, Andy's he born and raised in born in Chicago, but raised in New York City. So,
oh god, there's a combo.
There you go.
All right, buddy. Thank you very much. SP Futures down 9. NASDAQ Futures down 51. Not much going on yet. We'll see if we get another down day here. I hope we don't. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.